Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Sunday, July the 8th, as we like to do once a week. We'll check with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We got a lot of stuff to review tonight. There is a new Supreme Court nominee that will be announced, I think, on Monday night by President Trump. It is crazy. These things have become really crazy, very unfortunate. But whoever it is, and I understand that it could be a lady, last name is Barrett, I believe. She seems to be the one that everybody's talking about, although other people say, no, that's not necessarily true. But anyway, whoever it is that's going to be put through a ideological meat grinder, and it's all going to be about Roe v. Wade. It's very sad that it's gotten that way. Secretary Pompeo in North Korea was in the news. President Trump is telling the allies to pay up. He's reminding them that, you know, it costs money to defend him. I guess that's not a bad idea. The angry left, what they like to call the resistance, the woman hanging from the Statue of Liberty, this is not helping the left. I hope they realize that this is helping Trump. We'll talk about that. The American economy creating jobs in good numbers, and that's good news for a lot of people, particularly African Americans and Hispanics who are participating very nicely in this economy. And we may get Hillary Clinton back in 2020. The best news of the night is that we may very well have Hillary Clinton back in 2020. So I'm sure Bill is dying to talk about that. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz in New York. Bill, it's very warm here in Texas, which is what usually happens in July, Bill.
Well, yes, and we've had a couple of very, very nice days here. Warm, but you know, low humidity, very pleasant. Al Gore says it's deceptive, and that this is Trump's revenge. But I've enjoyed them, and I, of course, the news. I mean, it's actually not news; it's speculation on the part of a couple of journalists that Hillary Clinton is running for president again. I just can't wait. I mean, I feel a wanting of Hillary every time I go into every psychiatric hospital that I visit. I just feel that she must be president because she will rescue us from what we have today. You know what's interesting is that she's what we've been waiting for.
Remember when President Obama said, we are the ones we've been waiting for? He really meant Hillary. He was really talking about Hillary.
Of course he was. And I have no doubt there's, in fact, I understand it. I get this from very, very good authority that Hillary has been looking for examples of people who have made spectacular comebacks and have gone on to win the presidency. And, of course, the example that comes to mind immediately is Richard Nixon, who she helped destroy in 1972 as a lawyer for that committee. I mean, he ran in 1960, you remember, was defeated. Mm-hmm. Then he ran for governor of California. After that, a come down, and he was still defeated. And then he said very famously, you won't have Nixon to kick around anymore. And then came 1968. He ran, and he won. So I think there is apparently a recording of Hillary Clinton next to a portrait of Richard Nixon singing, you made me love you. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. And I think that's true. I think that she's channeling her inner Nixon.
Yes, she's also talking a great deal about Winston Churchill. Remember, he had a comeback.
He had
several comebacks and several defeats as well. So she's talking a little bit about him. I think somebody asked her if she was too polarizing, and she then compared herself to Winston Churchill, you know, and I guess in the early 40s or whatever. But I think it'd be great if she ran. I think it would be terrific.
And ironically, you know, this is what is so strange about this. Churchill is to a certain degree a pretty good example, except for one thing. Churchill had already held high office in Great Britain. He was discredited by the Gallipoli campaign in World War One and some other things, and he was in the political wilderness for years. She has she has also held high office. She was Secretary of State, although I think she was basically just a messenger for Barack and his weird policies. But they have a very different system over there. They have a parliamentary system, so Churchill could come back into power by a vote of parliament. Here, of course, we have a presidential system, so she would have to run and go to the country again. But you know something? We can laugh about it, and we do, and properly so. But there is an outside chance that she could win if she could get the nomination. I'm not so sure she could. I think that the party has now gone on to be almost Stalinist. I mean, it's craziness. I mean, there are elements of the party, according to press reports, that believe Bernie Sanders is too moderate.
That's right. Yes, that's exactly right.
All
I can tell
you
is
the new girl in the party is this new, you know, kind of dime store Evita, from the Bronx.
That's right. Yeah, she's apparently the future of the party, according to the chairman. But one thing, in all seriousness, about comparing anybody to Winston Churchill, I've always felt that people who want to be compared to Winston Churchill are people who are willing to stand up and tell what people don't want to hear, which is what he did. And she's never been that kind of candidate. I mean, she basically tells people whatever they want to hear. I mean, this woman, you can go on YouTube and find a position about everything from Hillary Clinton. If you want to find a position against illegal immigration, you'll find one. If you want to find a position supporting the Iraq War, you'll find one. I mean, whatever position you want to find, this lady has taken. So that to me, in all seriousness, I think that's the biggest difference with Winston Churchill, who was actually a statesman. This lady is not, in my opinion, a stateswoman or whatever they call a lady who is a statesman. But she's not. She's not a very serious person, I think. She just wants to be president, which is okay, I guess. I mean, not the first one in history that just wanted to be president. But I'm not sure the country's – I just don't think the country wants her as much as she thinks, Bill, in all seriousness.
Well, that's it. She hears what she wants to hear, and that is, of course, one of the things that would almost prevent it is the fact that she has gone on this loser tour. You know, had she been quiet after the 2016 election and said, I'm going to help my party, I'm going to help education, everything like that, and done something of importance, even being a writer, writing a book that was a real book, not a book about herself, I think it would have been better. But if she tries to run again, people are going to remember this magical loser tour where on every platform she gave a different reason for why she lost. And that has really diminished her. I mean, in effect, she ratified the people's choice by acting so badly.
Right. No, I think you're right. I think she's been really a terrible loser. I mean, I compare her to other people who've lost elections. Romney, I thought, was very gracious after 2012. McCain was gracious after 2008. And John Kerry, once in a while. Al Gore was a disaster after losing. But anyway, we have a tradition, I guess, we have a tradition in the United States that when you lose, you disappear. I mean, you just kinda,
well, that's true.
You know.
That's true. And also, you don't blame other people. And she's blamed, and you know, it's because I was a woman, and the misogyny, and this, and it's that, and the Russians, which is still the line they carry, they cost me the election. the fact of the matter is, I think she may be seen as, you know, last generation's candidate. Now, as I said, of course, we all know about Nixon coming back, but Nixon had been vice president. And and the behavior he engaged in 1962 when he lost the governorship of California, you won't have Nixon to kick around any longer. Well, they kind of forgave him for that. And the fact of the matter is that when he ran in 68, there was no great enthusiasm for him, but there was no great enthusiasm for Hubert Humphrey on the Democratic side either because he was considered damaged goods. Ironically, what won the election for Nixon was the Democratic Party, because it had kind of begun to self-destruct. Had the campaign gone on another week, most people feel Humphrey would have pulled it out. but it didn't.
Right, and George Wallace not run. I think that was another big factor,
yes,
I would think, because a lot of those states, maybe they were still Democrat states back then. But I just think that, you know, in the case of Richard Nixon in 68, the incumbent that year was not very popular, and the policies of the incumbent were not very popular. That may not be the case. Now, if Trump is very unpopular in 2020, anybody will beat him. But I'm suspecting that's not going to be the case. I still think, Bill, before we get to some of the other topics, talking about 2020, I keep thinking that when it's all said and done, sometime in 2019, many of these younger generation Democrats, like the senator from California, from New Jersey, and these people, they're going to look at the calendar and say, you know, we're better off waiting until 2024 and let somebody else go in and lose it or lose.
Yes.
And I think that's where Joe Biden steps in. Joe Biden will basically be the sacrificial lamb. And I'm convinced that that's what's going to happen, Bill. Now, he may be a tough candidate, too. But
yes.
It all depends on Trump, I guess.
I think it does. And also, I think that the role of the press has become so corrupt that it's very hard to predict what effect the press will have. I mean, the way in which they have lionized this, woman from the Bronx, who, by the way, is not from the Bronx. I mean, it, every day that goes by, we learn something else about this weird little girl. I mean, it turns out she was born in the Bronx, but that she was actually brought up in Westchester County, which is the eighth most affluent county in the United States. So this rags-to-rags story that she likes to tell, I mean, she's a dime store of Vita. You can just hear her going out singing, you know, "Don't cry for me in my Bronx County. The truth is I never left you." I mean, it's
right.
That kind of a story. And every time, and now, like the typical, you know, messy press we have, she's a Democratic Socialist, but they will not tell you what. Notice they don't do a single story on what the Democratic Socialists believe. The Democratic Socialists of today are Marxists. They're Reds.
Mm-hmm.
And they better get to start revealing what she believes. She's going to go to Congress in January. She's going to be greeted like a heroine. She's going to be on every television program. And sooner or later, somebody's going to ask her a tough question, and she's not going to be able to answer it because she doesn't know much about anything. It now turns out that all this heroic socialist talk about we're going to tax the rich to buy health care for everybody, it turns out not more than a few years ago, she was running some kind of a book business. I think it was a book business, and she came out in favor of lower taxes for business. Now, you know, it's whatever popular at the moment that helps her.
Well, and this is where the press, I think, is failing the public this would be a great opportunity for the press to destroy her, not by doing anything more than just asking her real questions. But she's obviously a very charming personality, and she's going to be on MSNBC as long as MSNBC has a primetime show. So she's going to be there every night. She's going to be the Democrat that they go to every single night. But one problem the Democrats have, Bill, is jobs. I mean, the economy is creating jobs, and you're seeing better numbers for African Americans, Hispanics. Investors Business Daily had a very interesting article about how Hispanic support for Trump is going up, and so is Black support. And it's all because of jobs. It's not because
they
like the guy necessarily. It's just, hey, the guy's producing, and that's what matters, I think, to most people, Bill.
Well, if the economy can be kept going, and that's not a guarantee, but if the economy can be kept going, and if he can avoid being torpedoed, you know, the knives are ready, and some of those knives are Republican knives to try to bring Trump down. I'm very concerned about the behavior of some foreign nations who are especially the Europeans. We expect it of the Chinese, but the Europeans are working against him internationally. I don't know what's wrong with these people. What he is doing is very much in their interest, and they don't realize it. They don't see that they are typical old European diplomats. They don't regard the Iranians as a potential enemy. They just see that they can do business with Iran, they can make some money in Iran, and they remind me of the people, one of the old cliches of the time, the people before the Second World War who were selling scrap iron to Japan. You know, and it came back to us in the form of bullets. And they, the European nations that signed this Iran nuclear deal actually had a meeting in the last week to try to see what they could do for Iran, so Iran would stay in the deal. For goodness sakes, the Iranians are desperate for money.
Mm-hmm.
This was a time to say, look, you want us to help us, and you help the United States. But they are the European Union is so anti-American. It's, you know, their foreign policy is run by this Italian communist woman, and instead of seeing an opportunity to get a better deal that would help preserve their safety, they cave right in.
That's right. Well, also President Trump is going to a meeting in Europe, and he's bringing a message that I think probably has a lot of support back here, and that's, hey, pay your dues.
That's right.
We like to defend you, but you got to pay your dues. But, Bill, there was a very interesting story. I may have sent you that story a couple of days ago, that many European countries are actually worried that Trump could pull the troops out.
Yes.
Because, you know, they play this double game. You know, they play this double
game,
yes. You know, well, the troops. But the fact is that without those troops, I'm not sure you can guarantee Europe or the safety or security of Europe, Bill.
Well, that's exactly right, and I think he has that club. He is concerned. I can't imagine him actually pulling troops out of Eastern Europe. Pulling troops out of Eastern Europe, because he has a certain loyalty to the East Europeans. I think he has an understandable contempt for the West Europeans, and especially for the European Union, because they always seem to be working against him. But he's also this week, and this could turn out to be one of the great comedy acts of the year, he's visiting London and visiting England, and they're trying to keep him away from the people because they're so afraid that he'll be picketed and yelled at and screamed out that he's meeting the Queen somewhere outside London. I think it's in a luncheonette somewhere, he's meeting the Prime Minister, I think in the basement of some castle, I don't know. Actually, they're going to have a state dinner for him, but it's not going to be in London. It's going to be, I think, at Windsor Castle. And then he's going to meet the Prime Minister. And back in London, the Muslim mayor of London has approved the floating above London of a balloon which will feature Trump as a young baby in diapers. Now, this is absolutely, you talk about poor taste. That is really poor taste. If that were done here by the Republicans against the Democrat, there'd be an uproar. But since it's being done against Trump, it's being applauded by some elements in British society.
Right.
But it is an extremely insulting thing to do, and something we would never do to a foreign leader.
Right. Imagine doing that to the Queen.
She,
you know, something like that. I mean, it would be completely condemned over here. But I think it really shows the immaturity of some of these leaders.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, my goodness. I mean, you can disagree with Trump all you want, but, you know, you don't do something stupid like that. But I just feel that the Europeans are beginning to realize that Trump is gaining politically, and if he was really weak, I think they would feel better. But he's not. Trump is actually gaining politically, and his foreign policy, particularly when it comes to the Europeans, I think he's got most Americans with him on that, Bill.
I think so. I mean, despite the fact that the Democratic Party has gone berserk, I mean, you had this statement today by Dick Durbin, saying that he would rather lose seats in the Senate than have Democratic senators vote for a Trump appointee to the Supreme Court. And he's saying this before he even knows who the appointee is.
Right.
I mean, for goodness sake, we're against him simply because he's because the appointee is appointed by Trump. That is just complete immaturity, as you said.
But Bill, they didn't do that to President Obama when he selected Ms. Sotomayor and Elena Kagan. Look, I guarantee you that we all had a lot of problems with her, with those two ladies. And I know many Republicans had a lot of problems with her, with both of them. But, I mean, there's a certain sense of respect. He won the election. And as long as you nominate people who are, you know, respected and active and with good education and all of that, I think you give the president the benefit of the doubt. But I wonder if Senator Durbin has told Senator Manchin that story about giving up your seat for Roe v. Wade. I don't know
that
he has actually
– I'm sure that'll be very popular.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll call Senator Manchin and say, you got to give up your seat for Roe v. Wade, okay, Joe?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that conversation.
And Heitkamp and some of the others.
That's right.
Well, it shows the behavior toward red state Democrats. I mean, they're treated as if they're expendable. But they're not expendable. The Democratic Party can use every bit of help it can get. Now, you know, they're already talking, of course, that if the Democrats win control of the House of Representatives, that Trump will be impeached, and I think he will be, because the Congressional Black Caucus will demand it. But what a train wreck that will be. And
for them as well, not just for Trump, for them as well.
Yes.
Because I'm not sure that's going to be very popular.
For them, it's particularly bad because that puts Trump in the best position. If he can keep the economy going during that, he's saying, even through impeachment, we kept an economy strong, but I can't guarantee it if they're going to act as recklessly in the future. If the economy goes down, he'll say, they impeached me and destabilized the government, and look what happened. Do you want these people running things? Yes, sure.
No, you're exactly right, and I'm waiting to hear. I'm dying to hear what the case for impeachment is. Article number one, he defeated Hillary Clinton. Article number two, he nominated conservatives to the Supreme Court. Article number three, he cut taxes. I mean, where's the the crimes and misdemeanor that are supposed to be part of the cases? And so I don't know. My sense is that the last thing they want to do is win the election, because then their base is going to demand it, and it's not going to be very easy for them. Remember in 2006 when they picked up the House, that the base went berserk trying to get out of Iraq, and they just couldn't do it. The Democrats couldn't do it. It's easier to get out of Iraq in the campaign than once you actually win, Bill.
Well, that's right. It was like closing Guantanamo. I mean, everybody...
Yes, exactly.
Now, the one thing, ironically, that Trump did do that he promised, that people said was not possible to do, is he moved the U.S. Embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. And everyone said, that's just a routine campaign talk. You'll never do it. And he did it. And whether one agrees with the timing or not, at least the man was a man of his word. He actually did what he said he would do. That was one of Reagan's great strengths also. He understood what he had pledged, what people expected of him, and he did it. And there were people who were against some of Reagan's policies, but they would say, you've got to admire the man. He came into office saying, this is what I'm going to do, and that's what he did.
Exactly. We're going to take a little break, Bill, and after the break, we'll get into the Supreme Court. We'll talk a little bit more about this angry left and resistance to President Trump. We'll be right back. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We're going to get into the Supreme Court and North Korea and a few other things in a minute. Bill, I just wanted to take a quick time here and talk about happy number 83 to Steve Lawrence, who is someone who I've always liked. I loved his arrangements with Edie Gourmet and her albums. They were married, of course, and they were both out of Brooklyn, I believe, or New York.
Yes,
and I just thought he was great. And 83, you know, time flies. But he was a great singer, Bill.
He was a great singer, as was his wife, Edie Gourmet. And they always sang together. Well, not always, but I mean most times. And they were Steve and Edie. They came into popularity in the 1950s, where we still had the end of the golden age of American popular songs. They sang the great standards and sang them well. As a matter of fact, I remember at one of the Academy Awards ceremonies, Steve Lawrence teamed with Frank Sinatra to sing a medley of songs that were never nominated for Academy Awards, but went on to great popularity. It was a wonderful segment. He was a terrific singer, and Edie was a terrific singer. They achieved a television popularity and a recording popularity in some cases. But it was hard for them as they went on with their career, as other kinds of music came along that kind of replaced theirs. They always had work. They worked in Las Vegas. They worked elsewhere. Very, very accessible, popular pair. No scandals. Edie died in 2013. And they did lose a son, which devastated them. A young son who was about 20, who was a tennis pro, and I think died of a heart attack. But they always maintained themselves. They were never in the news for tawdry reasons. And I think one of those husband-wife teams that we remember with very great affection.
Yes, they were great. They were really great. I just remember my parents used to love her Spanish albums, and they were always together, Steve and Edie, and they were married in 1957. I saw a note today. And one thing that I also saw today is that they were under a lot of pressure in the 60s and 70s to change, as they say, to move into rock and all of that. And no, they never did. They stuck to their bread and butter, and there was always an audience for that bread and butter, as they like to say, and they were very popular in Vegas. I also remember them a lot on television, Bill. I mean, it seemed like when we used to have these, when we had these variety shows, they seemed to be on many of those shows quite often, Bill.
Yes, very much so, and they were both very, very personable. Of course, Steve Lawrence is now retired, but as I said, remembered with great affection, and
they really are.
They really are, and that age of television is now gone, really. I think there are very, very few people left. Steve Allen is gone. Jack Parr is gone. Johnny Carson is now gone. I think the only person who is around, who lives from that age of late-night television, is Doc Severinsen from The Tonight Show. Mm-hmm. He's the only principal of The Tonight Show who's still alive. I knew him when I worked at that show. A terrific musician, but it is a fading era, and I wish that some of these late night comedians would learn something from that era, and that is that late at night, when people turn on a television set, they're there to be entertained, they're there to hear some good jokes, they're not there to get a political lecture, and it's just driving everybody crazy. They have ruined these shows.
They have, and they're also losing audiences, from what I understand, which is, of course, what they're supposed to be increasing audiences,
gaining audiences,
and they seem to be doing the opposite. Well, right before the break, we were talking about the Supreme Court, and President Trump is supposed to nominate someone on Monday night. There's a lot of talk that this lady, Amy Coney Barrett, is topping the list, although I've heard that there's a couple of others as well. I think if you look at their backgrounds, Bill, all three or four of them who are on the short list, they're all extremely qualified, very well-educated, very smart people, the kinds of people that in another generation would have been approved 98-0
That's right.
by the Senate. It's sad. I mean, it's sad. Every time I watch all of this, Bill, it reminds me of that article that David Brooks wrote back during the Sam Alito hearings, when he said that Roe v. Wade has so poisoned things in Washington that we should overturn it just to get rid of this idea that every question to a Supreme Court nominee has to be about Roe v. Wade, Bill.
I think you're absolutely right. It was an abomination no matter what side you're on the abortion issue, it was a legal abomination. I mean, they found abortion in the Constitution. Even Ruth Ginsburg once said about it that she wished abortion rights, which she favors, would have been done through the states. And she's right. You don't have courts making social policy. That's not what they're there for. But Justice Blackmun, who was kind of a mediocrity appointed by Nixon, and no one ever expected that he would make history, but he is the one who wrote the decision. I think it was legally something that, as you said, we regret. It has dominated talk of the Supreme Court for a generation now. And what is so sad about it, more than a generation, what's so sad about it also is that it did nothing whatever to heal the divisions over abortion. It is unlike Brown versus Topeka Board, which was the very famous desegregation decision, which obviously was resisted by the South for a while, but eventually they went along with it because I think a new generation came along. They realized that segregation had to go. But in this case, it's the strangest thing that the pro-life position, the position against Roe, has actually been growing in recent years in the United States. And I, you know, had it been done through the states, had it been through popular rule, I think we would have had a much more civilized discussion.
Well, my guess is that we would have abortion in many states, but there would be some restrictions to it, like they just did in Ireland, you know, where they passed abortion, but only in the first 12 weeks. But what gets me more than anything else is, well, first of all, what it does to these nominations, that, I mean, everything. I mean, what Senator Durbin, the reason he's out there even criticizing a nominee that he doesn't know is because he's under a lot of pressure from the left that he has to say this. I mean, I don't think he's enjoying this at all, but he's under all this pressure from the left that he's got to say. But the argument that drives me crazy is when they say they're going to take a woman's right away, or her rights, they're going to be taken. And I always say, wait a minute. If it's overturned, it goes back to the states, and the states, most of them will pass some kind of abortion opportunity, and there will be some restrictions. But if you really want an abortion, you'll be able to get one legally in most states, Bill.
It would vary from state to state.
Sure.
One of the things that is changing the whole view of abortion, well, not the whole view, but two things are changing. One is Europe has gone in the somewhat pro-life direction. Now, it's still, I think, legal in all European countries to have an abortion, but under different circumstances, and they have put in some restrictions that even we don't have here in this
mm-hmm.
country. And I don't believe that late-term abortion is permitted in Europe, except under very, very special medical
mm-hmm.
circumstances. Another thing that's changed is that the young generation, the ones behind the millennials, are very technically oriented, scientifically oriented. They grew up seeing sonograms, which have now reached the level of almost photographs.
Mm-hmm.
They know something about developments in medical practice and pediatric practice, where they can save babies in the womb. And I think that many young people, apparently, from what this has been reported, I don't know them personally, but that many are troubled by abortion. And I think that is something that the women's movement should have been aware of, that over time, the development of medical techniques, of saving fetuses at very, very early ages, would run into Roe v. Wade. And I don't think they ever took the arguments against abortion seriously.
Right, and I just know, I think for me personally, I've always felt I'm personally against abortion, but if we get it through legislatures, I can live with that. Not live with it, but at least I can accept the legitimacy of it. But what bothers me more than anything else is what we're going to see in the next 30 days, which is whoever the nominee is going to be is going to get 62,000 questions about Roe v. Wade. Each one's going to be different.
Yeah.
Well, you know, are you against settled law? Well, first of all, it's not a law. It's an opinion.
Okay, that's right.
So, I mean, let's get our arguments right. But and then, you know, so are you saying that no Supreme Court opinion can ever be overturned? Well, we've had a few of those in history, haven't we? Haven't we had them, Bill? And so I just think, it's what it does to our politics that bothers me more than anything else, Bill. We wouldn't be having this opposition to these three people if it weren't for Roe v. Wade.
That's absolutely correct. It is completely it has become the symbol of the feminist movement. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that is they consider that their symbolic victory. I think that frankly they ought to get a better symbolic victory than that,
mm-hmm.
Because you know it's the oldest story. Whether you are for abortion rights or against abortion rights, the best comment I think ever made on abortion was made, ironically, by John Kerry's wife, Teresa, when he ran for president. She was asked about it, and she said, "It's the stopping of a beating heart," and that's exactly what it is. And
mm-hmm.
I think people increasingly are uneasy. It is an ugly discussion because, on the one hand, it is very, very hard to put down and ridicule the moral character of the pro-life argument. On the other hand, many people are very torn. They'll say, well, yes, I'm personally against abortion, but, you know, I'm not that 16-year-old girl who got pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And you know, she's in a desperate situation. I think many people feel very, very uneasy with the whole subject.
Well, and that's why you let, in my opinion, that's why you let state legislatures deal with these issues. Because in the compromise that naturally comes in the legislature, I think there would be an opening for that 16-year-old girl, given parental guidance and religious guidance or whatever, to get an abortion if she really wants one. But, you know, the idea that any abortion is tolerated is what turns people like me off, you know, because abortion after 20 weeks, I don't understand how anybody can do that, Bill.
Well, that's true. That's true. But, I you know, people seem – I mean, you had Barbara Boxer, you know, one in the U.S. Senate for many years from California, who was actually asked if a baby once born had citizenship right or something to that effect, had rights to life, if it was lying next to the mother on a table in the delivery room, and she said no. She said that it's up to the mother to decide. I mean, I think people just couldn't believe what she was saying. I'm not so sure
right.
she believed what she was saying. But they are so intimidating, these pro-abortion groups, that the Democratic Party is run by them and by a bunch of other groups. The Democratic Party has become an absolute disgrace. It isn't even a political party anymore. It's a business. It's just a business.
That's right.
Elected. It's the business of getting elected. They don't really stand for anything. You know, if it would have been wonderful, wouldn't it, had the Democratic Party come forward with its own slate of candidates for the Supreme Court, moderates, not liberals,
mm-hmm.
but moderates, saying, I think these are people we can agree on. And it would have put Trump into a difficult position, but they have reached the point where they don't even come up with an idea to solve a problem. And on those rare occasions when they discuss anything, it is so reckless, like eliminating ICE, the Immigration Enforcement Service.
That's right.
I mean, why don't we eliminate some of them want to eliminate imprisonment. Some of them want to abolish prisons. We will abolish the police. We will abolish the Air Force and the Navy and all these things because, after all, we're a good people. We don't want to fight anybody. You know, the problem is, what if somebody wants to fight us, you know? And
well, we learned that lesson in history, didn't we, Bill?
We certainly did.
Didn't we learn that lesson about not being ready for war?
Yes, and how many boys it cost, you know, and
that's right,
and, yes, and they, you know, they so there are some in this whole group who consider crime to be simply a symbol of discontent in society. Some of them even regard criminals as heroes who are protesters, and their crime is a protest. You know, it's the old story of the cry for help. The cry for help. Now, of course, in this cry for help, I got 3 Rolex watches, so I'm not crying anymore, but they're crying for help. It is really a party in a pathetic position. Bill Clinton tried to save it in the early 90s and to a certain extent did, but they're right back to where they started, and I put the blame on one person, and that's Barack Obama.
That's exactly right. No, I think you're right about that. But you know what's going to happen over the next 30 or 45 days? Whoever the nominee is going to sit there, and he or she is going to say, well, I cannot answer that question because that's a hypothetical question. Well, I cannot answer that question because that's a hypothetical question. Well, I cannot answer that question. And so we're going to be – these hearings are going to be a joke. There's going to be all kinds of protests, you know, don't take my rights away, and some idiot will break into the hearings. But at the end of the day, unless something goes very wrong, Bill, I think those red state Democrats are going to put this candidate over the 51 – and if the Democrats are angry about it, they should get angry at Harry Reid because he's the one who changed the rules, Bill.
That's right. I love, don't you, some of the ideas now that some Democrats have come up with for dealing with this crisis. This is the worst crisis in history. I mean, everything is the worst, you know, maximalist language. And they now some are talking about packing the court. They tried this in 1938. Roosevelt tried to pack the court because he didn't like the decisions of the old judges who were against the New Deal. And it didn't go down well with the American people, even though the American people liked Roosevelt. So now they're talking about adding justices. And now another idea that is gaining it's a comedy show. They wanted to – somebody suggested dividing California – into 7 states, each one would have 2 senators, And so there would always be a Democratic majority in the U.S. Senate. Can you see trying to do that? The Republicans will come along and say, well, how about dividing Oklahoma into 12 states?
Right.
You know,
that's right. Or Texas into four or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no, well, I think you're right. I mean, they're silly. These people are silly, Bill. That's all you can say about them.
They're silly. And you know what's happening around the United States, you're beginning to see it, is that
mm-hmm.
people are leaving states over the state's adherence to some of these crazy policies. A lot of people are leaving California.
Right. And I kept thinking, Bill, that if, you know, Donald Trump, President Trump must be very lucky, because on July 4th, you right there in New York, in your home city, there were 4,000 people who were waiting to see the Statue of Liberty, a very popular thing to do on July 4th, or really any other day, I guess, but especially in July 4th. And they couldn't get up to the Statue of Liberty. They couldn't enjoy their day with their families because some clown gets up on the Statue of Liberty and decides to make it all about herself. You know, it's her
day.
That's right. Doesn't care about anybody else. It's her day.
That's it. And she's, ironically, an immigrant from a country in Africa, I believe Congo, which is a hellhole where people are being murdered. And this country really saved her life. And instead of being grateful, even if she wanted to protest some policies, which is fine. We've had immigrant groups before that have protested.
Many of the early
social protesters in America were immigrants. That's fine. But you do it with love for your new country. You don't come and say, I'm devoted to my first lady, Michelle Obama, who means so much in my life. I went as high as I possibly could. And, you know, and somebody should have said, yeah, and a lot of police officers risked their lives. Oh, she criticized the police. She liked the park police. I love it. She said the park police was so much more courteous than the NYPD. Well, it's because the NYPD had to climb those ladders to try to save her. And they weren't having a good day, especially in that heat. But you get these people, and they, you know, she'll be queen for a day. It's like the old radio. There was a radio program at one time that went on television called Queen for a Day. And each day a group of women would come on and tell very sad stories. And one was named Queen for a Day, and you got to be a queen for a day. And this is what it reminds me of. It's like a television game show.
Yeah, and you just have to wonder, people across the country watching this on television. I mean, I think President Trump said that he would have left her up there.
Yes, that's right.
And I thought that was hilarious. Because I bet there were a lot of people who wished, oh, just leave her up there and see if, you know, what it's like to spend the night up there, you know. But I just think it's so typical of these people. It's all about them. It's all about what they want. And yet 4,000 people who wanted to go see the Statue of Liberty, who probably had made vacation plans, had made plans with their families to spend the day there, I bet those people are voting for Trump, Bill. I just don't see any of them.
They used to say back in the 1960s that many of these protests only created carloads of Republicans. And I think it will probably happen again. Well, there's now a new movement, a leave movement, where people are encouraged to leave the Democratic Party. And there are videos they're making. You know, it's called walk away. You know, you can walk away from the Democratic Party. And I think that's a very good idea, because this isn't the party anybody grew up in. It's just an awful mess.
No.
And the convention in 2020. Go ahead.
Oh, that convention, Bill, that's going to be fun.
Yes, I can see the Palestinian flag being carried across the floor in reverence, and no American flag. You know, in the last Democratic convention, it was only until at the third night of the convention that there were any American flags in the hall.
Amazing.
They forgot them. And they suddenly realized it, and they flew them in, and suddenly the American flags appeared. But you can be sure that big Palestinian flag, that's now their big thing, that they're at one with the Palestinian people, and it's just farcical. The new Avida from the Bronx, she's interested in Palestinian rights, you can be sure. Well, the first two nights of the Democratic Convention in 2016 were devoted to quote mothers of the movement, which is the movement about police actions against African Americans. It's going to be much worse in 2020. It's going to be
Article that I sent you about how this new resistance movement is openly anti-Israel. I mean, it's no longer
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's just openly anti-Israel. And I don't, I mean, that's at some point that has to crash with the large Israeli-American community here in the United States. I mean, I may have told you this the last time or a couple of weeks ago. There's a lady at this breakfast that I go to every Friday. It's a Latin American club that I belong to. And I was asking the lady about, you know, what do you think of these comparisons that they're making between these kids and the concentration camps? And she said, oh, I was so offended by that I called the station, she said, and just gave them a piece of my mind. And I've heard other people, Jewish Americans say the same thing. But now Senator Durbin, and I hope I'm quoting him correctly, but he was now comparing those little boys in Thailand, underground with the kids at the border. This is how crazy this has gotten, Bill.
Well, he has a history of making statements like that. He's the assistant minority leader. I think he would have been minority leader had he not had a history of making very foolish statements. And that's another one. So
that's ridiculous.
This used to be a party of giants, really. I mean, I remember, I think we've talked about this before, the 1960 election when President Kennedy was elected, that you looked at any one of the Democratic contenders for the Democratic nomination, they were all thoroughly qualified to be president. I mean, they were people who were people like Stuart Symington. Of course, these names have been forgotten. Henry Jackson, Lyndon Johnson ran. Hubert Humphrey ran. Adlai Stevenson ran. They were all qualified. They were all people of substance. And look what you're getting today in the Democratic Party. I mean, you're going to have it's like the 72 convention. Who are they going to nominate? If they don't nominate Hillary or Joe Biden, who are they going to nominate? Kamala Harris? Kirsten Gillibrand from New York, who has a different policy every day? Whatever is popular this week, that's what she believes. I mean, I know that there are suggestions that people, somebody can come in and save the party. Who? They don't allow any young people to run, and the young people who are emerging now are nutcases. I mean, like, the one in the Bronx. And they think, they think this is wonderful. This is our future.
That's what the chairman of the party was saying, that this young woman is the future, to which I would say, please bring it on. If that's your future, let's bring it on, because that's exactly who we want to run against, is these crazy, like this young woman doesn't know a thing about anything other than she just happened to get lucky in winning this primary. You have to wonder what Representative Crowley thinks about his campaign effort, because he just literally gave up a seat to this young woman. We're going to take a little break. We're going to come back. We'll talk about Korea. That's been in the news lately. And look ahead at next week. I think we know what next week is going to be about. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. One more segment here with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, Secretary Pompeo is in North Korea, and I guess they had some talks. The North Koreans said this and said that, but it all sounds to me like just a lot of talk. I think it's moving in the right direction, Bill.
Well, the North Koreans issued a very, very harsh statement after they had discussions with Secretary Pompeo. And they said that the Americans acted like gangsters, which is a fairly typical word that they use, and that they were very disappointed in the session. I would not take words like that too seriously. Look, it is possible that the talks will fail, and that we'll be right back where we started from. But as the secretary said after the session this week, he said the sanctions remain in place. And if the talks fail, the sanctions are going to be escalated. And the North Koreans know that. They can thump and bang and do all kinds of things. I think there is probably a route to a solution. I think if the tray of goodies is laid before them and said you can go here, or you can have an atomic bomb, which you can't use because if you use it, you'd be leveled, which do you choose? And I think in the end, there may be some kind of a solution. It may not be a total solution, but it'll be far better than what we have had before. But the press will not give it a chance. They look for any opportunity to claim that that Trump is losing, he's not getting what he wants. They are treating Trump in many respects the way many people in the press treated Lyndon Johnson in the 1960s. They treated him horribly because he wasn't Kennedy. I mean, that was the basic reason. They didn't like the way he spoke. They didn't like the way he walked. They didn't like the way he used the English language. And that was the big thing to them. And they hate Trump. They absolutely despise him. And hatred never gets you anywhere. It really doesn't.
No.
It doesn't lead to anything good. And but so that no matter what Trump does, they will try to figure out a reason to say it's failing. The economy is the strongest I think it's been in my lifetime, and they will attribute it to Barack Obama, and they'll be attributing it to Barack Obama until it starts to fail. Then it'll become Trump's economy, and it's very sad because the news media is losing its credibility, and you can see increasingly by voter reactions that voters are basically ignoring what they're seeing in the media, and I think that's good. They're using good tech.
I think you're right. Next week, Bill, as we look at next week, obviously the Supreme Court is going to be, or the selection of a nominee is going to be a big story of the week. But there's also something else happening. This person from the FBI is apparently going to do a public hearing before the House or the Senate. That's going to be interesting. I don't know what to expect from that, Bill.
Yes, I think that could be very interesting. And I think it will occur while the president is out of the country. Because, you know, we mentioned before, he's going to be in England this week meeting the Queen. And, I can just see Trump saying, you know, Queen, this castle, you put it on the market. I can get you a good buyer.
That's right. We can turn it into another good Trump hotel here for you in London,
right.
Queen.
Yes, the Trump
you need
window.
Money anyway. You need money to run your operation. I understand you don't have enough money. We'll make it into a profitable operation for you, Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah, that's true. But, yes, the FBI guy is going to testify. The Supreme Court nomination will be announced. I would not be completely shocked if it was somebody out of the blue, but I do think it probably will be among those he has mentioned. The president will be abroad. There'll be more reaction to the Korean talks, and some issue yet unseen may arise during the week, because people forget that the election for the midterm candidacies is only 4 months away.
That's right. Well, you know, Bill, that there will be a very big issue this week. You know, it's about the pop. Something with what the First Lady wears to the European trip will become a topic of major analysis over at the panels at CNN. And if she doesn't go on the trip, that'll be a big issue too, Bill.
Well, they'll try to make something out of that. I don't know if she's going. I don't know if she's scheduled to go. They're trying to bring her down too, I think she's kind of resilient, but also she's somewhat in the background. But we'll have to see. There will also have to be a new EPA chief who will be named. I don't know who that will be. I think the president is better without Pruitt. He had too much baggage, and glad he's out of the picture. And as I said, some issue yet to come, because the press now, especially from now on, and especially beginning early September, will be looking for any issue in Trump's background that can bring down the Republican Party. And remember, the thing that hovers over all of this is the Mueller investigation. People forget Mueller can still hurt Trump. He can still hurt Trump, and I think they're aware of that, and they're going to try to disrupt Mueller to the extent that they can. But Mueller can come out with a statement a week before the election, and while it would be outrageous because of its timing, it could still have impact. And there have been cases like that in the past. So that is something we should always have in mind.
That's right. No, I think there's always that element of surprise. Remember what was done to the first Bush on the Friday before the 92 election.
Right.
I don't know how much of an impact that had, but it probably did hurt a little bit, you know, just hours before the election, or at least President Bush always thought that it did, and he probably
right
about that, Bill. Yeah, it
and also when his son ran in 2000, right before the election, it came out that he had had a charge of alcoholism early in his life, I think that I don't know if it had any effect at all, but you always have to worry what comes out of the last minute.
Well, you know, there's some woman out there just waiting for her moment to bring out her story about Donald Trump, how in 1986 at 2 o'clock in the morning Trump told her something 40 years ago or something like that, and I'm sure there will be a reporter out there who will tell us if this is relevant 40 years later.
Yes, that will be that will probably happen, or something like it will happen, and it will be another black mark on the press.
That's it. No, I think you're exactly right. Bill, thank you as always for your time. It's always a great honor to have you, a lot of fun to have you. Keep up the great work at Urgent Agenda, and we'll just get together and do it the next time.
Can't wait for next week.
All right, thank you so much. Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We always have a lot of fun when we get together with Bill. Always have a lot of information when we get together with Bill. You need to follow Urgent Agenda. You're going to get a lot of daily analysis, some very good updates of what is happening in the news. So check out Bill's Urgent Agenda. I have a link to it on the show information. Check him out. Check him out. I think you're going to grow to like it as I do and many other people do. Good evening, everybody, or good night, I should say, from Dallas, Texas, where it's very warm, but that's what happens here in July. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.